At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Here is your host, Derek Pearson, brought to you by Canopy Street Market.
Boom. In your face. Like an Arkansas no-hitter. Take it. You will get no hits and you will like it. You will like it. The Sartor Hammond text line, 402-464-5685. Want to be a part of what we're doing? Hit us up. Hit me with a what's up on a Wednesday. It's what's up Wednesday. Get your shout outs in. It's like strike outs versus the act, which is strikes out. Like we went through the full process of doing that. You can follow on all of the live video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, Allo Channel 961. Please download the Ticket app. Go to your Play Store and find it, 927 The Ticket. Download the app so we can go where you go and be where you are. Greatly appreciate that. We are Blur Tailgate. We will be here today until 6 o'clock. We'll be here Saturday from 3 to 7, but they will be open 3 to midnight on Saturday as they head into the College World Series Finals, the final series, and we're headed towards that. Game one today with Coastal Carolina and Louisville is the correct pronunciation. Louisville.
Yeah, it's all one.
Louisville. The Cardiac Cards versus the Chanticleers, and it is Chanticleers, not Chanticleers. I do that just to irk people. I do that just to irritate people because it's a thing, right? You, whatever way you say it, you understand who we're talking about. Game two tonight at 6 o'clock, the Go Tigers from the Bengal Tigers from Louisiana State University against the Hogs, the Razorbacks of Arkansas, Tui Pig. There'll be lots of Go Tigers and Tui Pigs in the building tonight at 6 o'clock. Again, if you have tickets, great. If you don't have tickets, they are available. You're about an hour away from first pitch, game one. And those tickets, you can go to the College World Series website and get in a lower bowl for $25. So, you know, for those of you that have the ability, the weather's nice so far. Looks good up here. Looks like we're going to be able to get through the day. And then, but if you want to go to a later game, expect to spend $125 in the pocket somewhere to go see the rematch between Arkansas and LSU. They've met several times this year, but today determines whether there is a game tomorrow. And if game tomorrow, if LSU wins, they advance to Saturday's championship series. And if Coastal Carolina wins, they advance. If the other two teams win, we will have if games tomorrow.
It's interesting, too, because you think about the pressure that each team is facing right now as they kind of lead into this is that on one side you can punch your way to the College World Series championship. That's the goal the entire season, the goal playing baseball, all that together. So a lot of pressure there, but you have a little leeway, right? You could lose the game and still have a chance to fight for it. Whereas on the other side, Louisville and Arkansas today, they're playing for their season, and you know that other part of it is there, but it's a little bit further. I think if you think, well, we got to win two games, it sounds like an uphill battle. You got to win one game to survive to the next day, obviously. And see if they can punch their ticket to the College World Series. So different levels of pressure there. Then another thing I wanted to mention was there's a lot of focus on Gage Woods, obviously, for pitching the no-hitter. I was talking to my friend the other day. He told me, he surprised me. He said, my cousin was actually the catcher for that. So I have to pull up his name. It was Ryder Helfrich is the catcher there. And he said, from what he's heard, that was completely called by the catcher, all the pitches. So, you know, I think sometimes, obviously, the pitcher is going to get a lot of the glory as well. They should for pitching a no-hitter, but don't forget about the catcher who's calling a lot of it as well.
Well, the catcher knows, as we were talking about, you know, an earlier hour, the catcher knows you get those warm-up pitches. The warm-up pitches is not just to get loose. It's to get textures, to get feel, new baseball, old baseball, to figure out whether your plant foot has a natural spot for you to land, because somebody else has been in your house. Somebody else has slept in your bed. And if you're a 5'11" pitcher, your plant foot hole is going to be different than a 6'6" guy. If you're right-handed versus a left-handed, plant foot hole will be different. So the warm-up, that's what that's for. Go in and find out. Listen, what kind of jump do you have on the fastball? If you throw a multi-seam fastball, how's it breaking? Where do you need to spot it? Right? Because if I throw a slider and it's running in its full form, I know there is a start point when I go to my release window that I need to hit for that thing to end up where I need for it to end up. So I have to learn in the warm-up what my target spot is for my slider, what my target spot is for the breaking ball, and can I reach it without changing my slot, right? The throwing side, the release point. If you change the release point with the change of the pitch, you're tipping. So if I watch you in the warm-up and your breaking ball, your curveball is up from a three-quarter window, but your slider is a little bit lower, that's the tip. I know that when the ball comes out of that window, it's gonna break and run, and I need to be on it. Fastball, if the same window from it, then I'm looking for rotation. I'm looking for seams, and I might be looking for foot placement, because pitchers will make a small adjustment on the plant foot for the breaking ball because you need to snap it a little harder. They will often get that foot down earlier for the breaking ball and later for the fastball because you need to hump it up. But you need to pay attention in the warm-up. That's what that's for. And the best eyes for it is the catcher. I can't see it from the dugout. As a coach, I just can't see it. I got to trust. I'll look over. I will have him run out to talk to the pitcher. You see the catcher right after one run out to the pitcher. Usually that's for the skipper. Because when he runs back to home plate, he can nod to me and give me a one or a two and tell me what's working or not. Right? So then I can get into the port. And then also I've given the catcher the scouting report. I try not to talk to pitchers during games. I will absolutely talk to the catcher. I don't want to get in the head of the pitcher. Have your own conversations. Leave me alone. I'm not messing with you. So, shout out to the catcher, because him knowing that somebody is gripping the bat tightly and settling in for dead red, if he sees it and digging in with the back foot, he sees it, you know what? He won't be able to break it down and get to the breaking ball. So that's how he calls that breaking ball to start it in the ninth inning. You see a thing, you call it, you get the result. So bravo to it.
How often does again, I've never played baseball, so some of these questions might sound 101, but that's all right. So how often when you're doing warm-up pitches, are you showing your whole stuff? You're trying to warm everything up?
Depends on the pitcher. Crafty pitchers don't want to show you. Power pitchers absolutely want to intimidate you. Power pitchers want to show you, hey, bro, you don't have the hands to get to this. You can see how quickly it's popping, but you can't see late movement from the on-deck circle. So you can see how, you know what, that looks like 96, 97. What you can't see until you get in the box, and bravo to the folks who are doing the ump cam.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is a whole new level of respect to see late movement. And by late movement, release point is one thing. How quickly it's moving, some pitchers throw a heavy ball, which picks up speed as it gets closer to home plate. You can't tell that from the bat, from the on-deck circle. You also can't tell the break on a ball. Late movement on a two-seam and a four-seam, entirely different. You need to see it from inside the box in order to do it. And quite frankly, if I have a good feel for it, I'm not going to show you everything in the warm-up. I'm just getting loose. There's some pitchers. Nolan Ryan said, you know what? Bob Gibson used to talk about it. I want you to hear me in the warm-up because it's going to change your heartbeat. It's going to change your heart rate. Like, your pulse is going to pick up. If you stand in the box and Randy Johnson is slinging 97 at you from 6 foot 10.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you are making some business decisions from the on-deck circle. So it depends. Greg Maddux always said he never threw anything other than lace fastballs in warm-up.
Yeah.
Why would he show his hand?
That's kind of what I was thinking, is maybe he just warm up
the
fastball.
He was a movement and location guy. He wasn't going to show you what the location was. As a matter of fact, the catcher didn't know what he was throwing until he caught the ball back. So there's the famous story of Greg Maddux telling how he called pitches during his games. And how he called pitches was how he caught the ball when the catcher threw it back to him. So, like, if he threw it back to him and if he just snapped the glove, that was one thing. If he caught it and with two hands, it was another thing. He would let the catcher know what he wanted the next pitch was going to be, but how he received the ball back from the catcher. Pretty amazing stuff. Maddux was an alien. Like, there's one Greg Maddux. And it's amazing. But also, for that era, that if you weren't pop, Maddux could actually amp up to 94. He just didn't, because he would rather have control of the location and the direction rather than being able to pump. Now, he would surprise some people, because he'd go up to 92, and they go, wait a minute, the professor's out here dealing today. But that was only to set up the next pitch, which was probably a cutter off the hands that you would look stupid rolling with. So it depends on the pitcher and the pitching coach. Different pitching coach style. So Mike Maddux, Greg's brother, is a pretty good pitching coach. He had a different set of rules for what he wanted them. One, he worked on, okay, foot placement. Your warm-ups, I need the first four pitches to be about reestablishing the plant hole where your foot's going to land, because that was going to dictate. He also would tell you to come out, I need you to throw through window three in the first three pitches, because you might decide you're going to throw from slot two, depending on who's hitting. Top of the order, I'm throwing through my natural slot. Bottom of the order, depending on the pitcher, I may change my slot. I may change throw through slot one through the first time through the rotation, right? I may go full three quarter. I may drop down on critical two strike pitches to sidearm. Why? Because that hitter hasn't seen it.
Yeah.
He hasn't seen it. You're looking, there's three squares that you could place in a pitcher's release point. What window is the ball coming through? Because that's what your eyes need to focus on. I'm not looking at his eyes. I'm not looking at it. I better not be looking at his glove flip through, because that's a distraction. I shouldn't be paying attention to his foot placement. I better be looking at the window, his release window. And then as quickly as possible, see whether it's high rotation or not. High rotation will tell me it's gonna break and do something. If it's a solid rotation, quick, I know it's a fastball. Four seam is the deception, because the rotation changes the closer it gets to home plate. And you go, talk on it. This is science. I should have paid attention in science class.
I guess there's a reason we're hitting 300. Pretty good deal in baseball. That's tough.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Not easy to do. It is not 300. And they talk about it, especially at this level. At the collegiate level, it is a defining thing in your ability to produce on the college level, because it means you're identifying actual strikes. If you can identify strikes, one, you're removing 40% of pitches that are thrown to you. I don't have to pay attention if it's out of strike zone.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I don't want to see it. I don't want... If it is not a strike, I don't want to see it. I want to finite my strike zone vision to just the ball coming through a window that's going to fit in to a 12-foot box. That's it. Anything else, none of my business. And if I'm only swinging at strikes, I have a better shot of doing something good with it. If people, if you're below 300, it's because you are swinging at not strikes. I teach players. We would spend entire batting practices just watching for pitches in the strike zone, having a batter stand at home plate and have pitchers throw 15 pitches at them, call out ball or strike. Tell me that you can identify strike zone. Okay, now I can let you get your hands free. You now know what to look for, and it simplifies it because hitting in this day and age is simply knob of the bat on the level of the ball in a strike zone as long as it can stay on that level. That's it. That if I go from my launch point through the strike through the front of the strike zone with control of the knob of the bat, my hand lead hand on the level of wherever that pitch is going to be. I'm not going to chase it because movement means I'm just going to use the wrist to extend out or down. Bat head, this is how far in a strike zone the bat head can move. You have to know that. Smart hitters are good hitters. Smart hitters are 300 hitters. Power hitters, those are aliens that, quite frankly, they just need to see it and mash. Hit it and mash, bro.
The other question I have about catchers was how early in their in the development are they starting to call a majority of the game? Or like what age does that usually see that?
It depends on where they are in the country because different regions of the country work differently. Different coaches want control. Some coaches are control freaks. I don't trust you. Softball, you see, and I think softball is a really good indicator for it, where you see them with the wristbands. A pitcher comes in and they see the wristband, and because the pitching coach will put up a number or a color or they'll go, hey, you know, there'll be 16 numbers and the numbers have a different pitch call. You call the 16, go to 13. Well, they look down and, oh, 13 says curveball. Go to 12. 12, oh, 12 was a rise ball. It depends on the program. It also depends on the pitcher because, quite frankly, some pitchers need to feel like they're dominant and they're in control. I need to call my own pitches. There are catchers who are the real brain center of defensive baseball. Their catchers are like, look, coach, I need to do this. Like, I need to have control because the catcher giving the signal also tells the shortstop and second baseman how to position the players on their side of the field. If I'm throwing a breaking ball down and away, my shortstop better know and my second baseman better know. Center fielder also has to know. So the catcher puts down a signal. Behind them, you'll see a second baseman or a shortstop flash a number behind them. That's to the center fielder to let them know, hey, we're running heat up here. You might want to lean, maybe take a step, and not take a step before he pitches, but take the step as the ball's being pitched, right? Don't tip. Sometimes outfielders tip. Sometimes shortstops and second baseman tip. Listen, if you deepen up, shortstop slides over two steps towards the bag, and the second baseman goes deeper, that's outer half. That's happening. They're going over there, man. That's why they're positioned. So all of it is a series of movements, understanding, one, is it a catcher I can trust? Is he a thinking catcher? Because he might be an offensive catcher,
yeah.
And it might not be his thing calling pitches. You know, there are guys like Eddie Perez who make an entire career while hitting 230 because they're so good at calling plays and keeping the game pace up. Rarely you have a Gary the Kid Carter who's exceptional at both. Colton Fisk matured into the game. Cal Ripken was so good at shortstop that he called the pitches.
Jeez.
Cal Ripken called the pitches for the Orioles for decades, and people didn't even know it because he was a student of the game. His dad was a manager. As a matter of fact, when he came up, his dad was the Orioles manager. His younger brother, Billy, was the starting second baseman. So guess what? Cal Ripken called pitches. So it depends on the situation, depends on the players, depends on the coaching staff. I say that the earlier the better, because in Little League and travel ball, first of all, I don't want my pitcher throwing three pitches anyway. It's too early.
Yeah.
If you're throwing a curveball at 12, get a new coach. Get a new coach. Stop it. You're not built for it. Right? If you're at 14, you're playing travel ball, and it's high-level break ball, okay, if you tell me you're throwing a breaking ball, I'd be more I'd be happier if you're throwing fastball changeup and that you can locate them where you need for them to be. Then at high school, add the breaking ball. Add the breaking ball and add a breaking ball. I don't need a 16-year-old tendon throwing heater, changeup, curveball, slider. No, 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 no. You are guaranteeing that that young man is going to struggle and have issue. And then in college, if you can't be a college pitcher without two pitches. No matter how hard you throw, you have to have two pitches. And solid fastball, changeup. Solid fastball, curveball. Solid fastball, slider. If you have three pitches, you're a problem. You're a problem. And if you can control them and put them where you want when you want, you are in the conversation for playing games after your college career.
Now, that's a good way to – so personnel is really dependent. And then, you know, it kind of – as I kind of thinking through it too, that should help the catcher as they grow into it. There's not so many pitches to call as a young catcher, and then, you know, expands as you get it through the game.
Mastery is starting with the simple things. Mastery is that, one, he can handle the fastball in the strike zone. As a catcher, can you gracefully receive – a fastball in the middle of the strike zone. Then, next level catcher, can you master the black, the stripe on the plate? Can you handle that and make it look athletically arrogant? Like, you know what? That's right where I expected that to be. The easiest way to really piss off an umpire and a pitcher is to throw something on the black and make it look awkward, because you make the umpire have to make a tough decision and the pitcher feels like you're not there fighting for him. Okay. Step one, master the strike zone. Step two, master the corners. Then, master level three, starting catcher at a high school level. Can you handle the top and the bottom of the strike zone without looking unnatural? Is it an athletic movement for you to reach the top of the strike zone and the bottom of the strike zone without changing your elbow? I don't need a windshield wiper. What I need is you start back at your chest. You land and you hold. If you can do that, you're now a high-level high school catcher, and you have the ability for college coaches, because he's investing in 12 pitchers, and the last thing he wants is a catcher who's out here all over the place stabbing at peas. We would say, nope, I need you to catch the pea in the spoon. I need for you to get me the strike I'm supposed to get me the strike that I want. And then every now and then, steal one.
Yeah.
Steal one. I need for you to pull it. And catchers, when you watch catchers in the bullpen with starting pitchers, watch them, how little they're trying to move the glove. Now, the glove can cover the entire square. But what I need to do is start in the middle and not move no matter where it goes. I can cover all of it. And I need for it to look. Now, receiving, some catchers extend. I don't like catchers to extend, because it's what happened yesterday. You extend, and a hitter is deeper in the box, and he hits the back of the glove, and he gets a base. Nope. If I receive it, I need to receive it softly. I need pillows on my hands as a catcher, and then that makes me a collegiate catcher. That makes me a high-level collegiate catcher. Those things are taught and accumulated over thousands of pitches, thousands of rotations before you get into a game.
All right, final question on my catcher list is because I'm a Red Sox fan from back in the day. Tim Wakefield, the knuckleball. That's that's what I get to. Jason Veritek's probably the best catcher that Boston's had since the 80s. And he wouldn't even – he was not the catcher for Tim Wakefield. They'd bring in a different knuckleball catcher.
Well, because it breaks your tradition. It breaks it breaks your groove. As a matter of fact, knuckleballs not only break the catcher, but it breaks hitters for the next two nights because all of your tendencies no longer work. All the things that you do to trigger against a fastball, curveball, slideball, changer, you can't use those triggers against a knuckleball. You can't use it. The timing's off, right? Because it's 20 miles an hour slower. Curveball has one break that I care about at the hanging point. So if it's a hanger, I need to get that. I'm not trying to get it after the curve. I'm trying to get it at the hang. Slider, I need to get it at the hang. Because once it starts to slide, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Because that's two different. You're changing level and location. The slider changes both. You can't hit either one. If I hit first location, I'm popping it up. If I hit second break on the on the slider, I'm hitting a ground ball to the first baseman or second baseman, and it's a wash. I need to get it at the hang. Mm. And that's where it is. Knuckleball. There are three hanging spots, and none of them are fluid. None of them matter. None of them matter. You're out there catching a butterfly. What do you say? You're trying to eat soup with a fork. Mm. It is doing a dance that you are not a part of, and you are just out there hoping, Lord, this is your favorite son, Jason. He is throwing a knuckleball. Please put my bat on this knuckleball. And a lot of the time, God didn't answer. You're on your own. Good luck. So, yeah, it's there's lots to it. And, again, this is why baseball, the beautiful science that it is America's game because there's so many things that you can be good at and be good at this game. And there's so many ways for this game to humble you. That's why 300 hitters succeeding 3 out of 10 times, you are elite. And there is a reason. That's how it works. We're toward the break. More one-on-one from Blurred Tailgate when we come back.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.